with Jay Cuban. Hi, welcome back to Passion Talks. Today I'm with somebody I'm really excited to talk to. It's the mayor of Pensacola, Mr. Grover Robinson. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for coming down here, and I appreciate your willingness to reschedule with us. I apologize we had something come up, but I appreciate your flexibility in allowing us to reschedule. And glad to have you up here on such a sunny day.
Yeah,
great view out there of the city of Pensacola, so it looks good.
We finally got some good weather. You know, all the... But so I kind of want to start off just by asking you probably the most general basic question. You've heard it 100 times, but especially in today's kind of climate, I think a lot of people wonder, it's like, who would ever want to be in politics? And so I guess, you know, I'm asking, what made you eventually run for office?
You know, I will say I had no desire to be in politics, but I did have a desire for our community to be mm-hmm. better. And I tell people all the time, I love talking about this. And I talk to a variety of different places, students. I've talked to people at UWF, high schools, middle schools, even elementary schools. And generally, my position is the same thing when I'm talking is that the issue of why you get involved is because you want to make a difference. You are passionate about typically a place that you are. And for me, you know, I never had any wild desire to do anything significant from a political standpoint. But I did have a very strong desire to do something for this community. Mm-hmm. So in 2006. We'd had some challenges in Escambia County, and I looked around and thought we could do better. And I said, well, who's going to step up and do better? And I said, well, I guess if nobody else will sign up, I'll sign up. So I had the opportunity to serve there for 12 years, saw some things here at the city that I thought we could do differently. We could create a different type of situation, one where that was more trying to collaborative between mayor and council, one that was more collaborative within the city structure as a whole. So in 2018, I threw my hat in the ring for to become mayor and have enjoyed serving it and trying to put in the things we've wanted to do. Although clearly you get into things for a number of different reasons and then you get presented with the facts. No one realized there was going to be a worldwide pandemic, hurricanes and a variety of other things that have been 2020. But, you know, we're getting through it. And I feel like we've had a lot of challenges. We've had changes. But overall, when I look at where the city is and the things that are happening and the things that are progressing and moving forward and how we're staying on top of things, I am happy about where we find ourselves right now at the city, in spite of all the things that could have happened with all the challenges we've had this year.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of talked a little bit because I wanted to bring that up. You see kind of across the country, states are going kind of back into that lockdown mode. And I know Escambia County, it's a little lower than as far as the cases, as far as across the country overall. But what do you see with that going forward?
Well, we've learned a lot. I tell people all the time, when this all went down in March, I don't think mm-hmm. any of us really knew much of anything yeah. about what was happening. We've learned a significant amount about COVID, about how to deal with COVID since that time. And we've learned a lot. We've applied a lot of that knowledge. Again, I think when I look back at what we've done in Escambia County, we went through the original lockdown. Our numbers, what we figured out and determined for us that the real number we wanted to track was hospitalizations. Why we thought it was the most important were kind of twofold. One, it really was a number that would fluctuate up and down that would show people either getting sick or recovering. Unlike a lot of numbers that you have, you only see one number. You don't necessarily see whether they get better or not, but yeah. hospitalizations allows the number to go up and down. But more importantly, the reason we got into this was not to prevent, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's just to prevent the virus. Well, it's almost impossible to prevent the virus. Yeah. But what you can do, I think you can mitigate the virus in your community so that your healthcare doesn't get overrun, so that your healthcare can still function, because there's so much in our healthcare that's not just related to COVID. We have heart disease. We're a regional hospital center, so we have heart, we have cancer, we have a variety of other different illnesses and just matter of fact, everyday viruses that we're fighting in addition to COVID. And when the hospital gets overrun with COVID, it can't, not only does it create significant health problems to our community just from COVID, but we also can't handle the other things that we need to be doing on a day-to-day operation. So we picked hospitalizations. We've tracked that number. We decided that was the number we were going to go with. We saw it sort of go up in April and then come back down and us get on top of it. And then we were able to come out and reopen in March. And what we saw in March was we could reopen and have low numbers. And really for the month, I mean, not March, for May, for the month of May, we really had basically openings with very few numbers. And we were doing things and we were getting along good. And then we kind of got cocky. We got into June and everybody thought, mm-hmm. COVID's over.
Yeah.
All right, you know, just quit doing stuff. Well, then we saw obviously what happened in July. We had a huge spike in July, went up to 246 hospitalizations. But in late June, we instituted a mask ordinance mandate. We really got vocal about going after it. And if you look, we did that at the end of June. By July 21st was our high point, and we started going down ever since then. Seeing that hospitalizations are typically about 2 weeks in the rearview mirror. In other words, mm-hmm. if you institute a policy today, that policy won't really see the impact until 2 weeks because it takes about a week to get the virus,
right.
and then it takes about a week before you end up going in. So it's about 2 weeks before you go in the hospital. So we are 2 weeks in the rearview mirror. So you really look at about the time we put the mask mandate and started doing the stuff, we saw the numbers come down. Now, the challenge really kept coming down until about late September. We came back, we asked, you know, I said at that point when we got below 50, we would need to ask for the mask mandate to remove it. And I thought it was practical for us to remove it, not because masks aren't the right thing for us to wear. We've been wearing masks since April at City Hall, mm-hmm. two months before the mandate. The problem is just human nature.
Right.
When there is no threat, it's very tough to get people to focus on something like that. And so, again, we kept saying we should message, we should do everything we can with masks, but if we drop the mandate, the council didn't want to do it. But I had fears at that point that we would be today where we are in the middle of November. We've seen an increase in our hospitalizations. We kind of drew a line in the sand, like 50 coming down, that 75 going up was where we would do that. Last week, we hit 78 hospitalizations. We reinstituted the state of emergency, began mm-hmm. today, you know, trying to remind people that how important masks are, yeah. and what they do. So we've been very vigilant about that. I would rather have the opportunity to fluctuate in and out the mask ordinance, but the mandate. But, you know, again, regardless of whether it's mandated or not, you know, mask wearing is important. And the more we do it, the better we can keep the virus at bay. I fully understand human nature and that when there is no risk associated with it, it's likely that we fall back into bad habits. And that's where we see the spikes come back. But the good news is unlike July, where we just kept going up. We've at least gone up, and now we've kind of leveled. Now we haven't gone back down, but at least we're not going up.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to track it. We'll continue to manage and message according to that. It's just one of the things we've learned with this pandemic. But our objective is not to close down. We didn't close anything down in July, even at 246 hospitalizations. We want to keep businesses open, but businesses functioning in a way. And I think we're learning. I think we're learning better how to do retail, how to do office, mm-hmm. how to do all of these things with COVID clearly in front of us.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I really want to ask, like, there's a really big divide right now in how people are taking this, and how do you balance the side that's saying, listen, you know, we need small businesses open, you know, that's their livelihood. And then how do you balance where other people are saying this is it's a health thing and people are dying? And it's like there's two different, vastly different opinions on this, and it's becoming a very divisive issue.
You know, this is a good point. And I think regardless of whether it's COVID or other points, my position has always been to be balanced.
Yeah.
I think community, whatever you do, there's balance in nature. There's balance in what you do. And I think there's balance in this. And I think for us to do the right thing for the city, we've tried to to walk this very balanced line that says we've got to remain open, but the only way we can remain open is by being responsible. And so I think from the beginning, we've tried to communicate the importance of masking, staying out of congested areas, you know, trying to conduct commerce as much as we can outdoors, in UV light and everything else that's bad for the virus. So again, when we learn things, we implement those things. But I think it is a balance. We were just talking about that downstairs, and this is why I say what you've got to be able to be clear about is that let people understand what you're measuring and why you're measuring it. We try to be very clear about the fact that we're measuring hospitalizations and why we think that's the most important number. Then put parameters by which you will take actions and be very clear. In other words, we've said, hey, if we get below 50, it's probably an okay time for us to remove some of the things that we've done. If it goes up over 75, and then we've been consistent with the action. If we hit those numbers, we automatically, you know, we take appropriate action. Yeah. So I think if you can do that, you can build consistency in your messaging. You can build confidence in the public. And I think when the public has confidence, even if there's something going on, they feel like they can still operate and they know there's a fair way for them to understand what's happening. I think that's a balanced approach. I'm not saying everything is perfect, but you know what? Even when we had the mask mandate, people got COVID. Mm-hmm. Even when we had the mask mandate, people went to the hospital. And even when we had the mask mandate, we had deaths. So that did not stop us from having those things.
Yeah.
But clearly, the purpose of it was to try to drive our numbers down, and it did that. And so there are reasons that we do things, but we need to be very intentional about communicating the reason why we're doing that. And then be very intentional about when we let off the gas, in a sense, and when we stop doing those things, so that we build some consistency in the public to know that if we all can work together and achieve certain things, we're willing to take these precautions off. So you kind of get buy-in from the public, and I think that's very critical for government at any time. You know, our form of government is so dependent upon we are government. Of the people, by the people, for the people, but more importantly, we are governed by the consent of those who do it. So we have to be able to show what we're doing and get buy-in from the people. Otherwise, there will be no government. So I think any government that's out there operating has some responsibility back to its community and to be consistent mm-hmm. with it, what it does and the actions it takes. And I think if you can do that and you can explain it, most people are reasonable. People want to be in good physical health. They want to be in good financial health. And if you can explain to them why you're taking certain actions and what you're doing, I think they're willing to buy in at that point.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about the balance, because balance and everything, not just talking about COVID, because again, we have everything's becoming very partisan, you know, where it's split. And I guess I kind of want to just hear your personal opinion, being in politics, like how you view that kind of current state of division in our country.
Yeah,
what you think about it.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned this, because if you ask me, the thing, somebody asked me one time, they said, "What scares you at night?" I said, "What scares me at night is the divisiveness that we are reaching in our country." And I think that's one of the biggest things that concerns me. I enjoy, personally, I'm a big moderate in the middle of the curve. I'm mm-hmm. probably just right of center, but in the big part of the bell curve in the center, and I've never been a big believer of the extremes on either side.
Right.
And I, you know, the challenge is the party system and the primary system, the way it's done, it creates those that are partisan offices, and it pushes them further to the extreme rather than to the middle, where most of the people, it's like a bell curve, are in the middle. Mm-hmm. But the way that the elections are run, because of the primary system, you push everything to the extreme. At the city of Pensacola, we run nonpartisan, which is really kind of helps push things back to the middle.
Yeah, when you're not voting by party, you're voting for
exactly. You vote for the office. You don't vote for party. Nobody runs in a party. And not only that, it's not a plurality system. In other words, you you can't just win a party a nomination with a plurality. You have to win with a majority. So you have to, in the city, if you have multiple people run and two people, and nobody gets 50%, well, the top two people then go to a runoff so that one person has to get 50%. So by nature, those elections kind of force people to be more moderate in the middle, which is probably a case that can work with it. Here's my point. And I've always looked at this in the relationships I've had. You and I won't agree how we would do something on every single thing. Yeah. And it's okay. That's the way it should be, because I mean that's the great part and the beauty of what we have in our democracy is this difference and this diversity, which has really been a strength for America for over 200 years. But the challenge is it's that respectful disagreement. Mm-hmm. The challenge is not that I support or vote for you because you believe everything the way I do. The why I support somebody is typically because of who they are and the values and the morals that they have. And as long as I have the same values and the same, sort of feelings that way. And I feel the individual has the community at best interest. We may differ on a particular topic, but I have faith in that individual to do their job, because even though they may see it differently than me and may choose something differently than me, they have the community at best at heart. And not to say that even in the partisan politics we have, that couldn't happen. It has functioned that way for years. I just think we are drifting into this, everybody talks about we enjoy diversity, but then the first thing they do is attack everything that happens that's different. And again,
they disagree with, right?
You know, I've been a big believer that you and my friendships are not based on whether I agree with you or not. It's rather, do we have a set of values that we both see the same, mm-hmm. Want the same kind of things in the end, believe in the same kind of things. We can disagree, but as long as we believe in some of those things and have those same values, that ultimately that's what's more important to me, not necessarily, what's your political philosophy. And it's the same sort of, you know, do you win at all costs? No, I mean, that's not the purpose of it is to, yes, I mean, everybody plays the game to win, but you win within the rules that are there. And I think we're losing some of that. Even within our arguments, that we simply move to an argument just because that person identifies the same way politically as we do, and we excuse behavior, regardless, just because it agrees with the same tenet I have. I just think that's wrong. I think that ultimately creates huge problems for us. Wherever we go forward, it creates this tension that really splits us more apart rather than bringing us together. And I think the strength of this country has been its diversity and difference, but it's had unity within its diversity. I mean, you could have various different ways of thought, but still work within the same system and everybody working together. That's why I like the city. I mean, it's as a nonpartisan office. We're really about, there's not a Republican way to pick up garbage. There's not a Democrat way to fill a pothole.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just things to get done for the public. And that's what we've focused on very much. How do we deliver the best possible service? And it has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with service and dedication and the values that we feel are common. That's what we try to do. And yeah, I mean, there may be different decisions we have every now and then. But again, if the individual can show me that they have the best interest of the community at heart and why they made the decisions they made, I don't have to agree with every single person. I love, I have city council members that we don't agree much on anything, but I still love and respect them because I believe they're doing things for the right reason, even though they may see it differently than I do. I generally respect them for what they do and the opinions they have.
Right. This past election, it was the first time I was able to vote. A lot of my friends were able to vote. And you mentioned values, which I completely agree with, vote values. And But the problem I had, the problem some of my friends had, and we talked about it, is you have kind of two sides and two different, completely different stories, and, you know, things can be spun million different ways to figure out. And so it's kind of hard to figure out what the true values are. And I think that kind of, it can create a general distrust, you know, of politicians in general. And I kind of wanted to ask you your opinion on that, and how could we mend that? How could we fix, you know, that distrust between politicians and, you know, the people?
These are good points. I generally, the way I look at it is, I've only participated in local politics. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that's critical is because even in local politics, you can pretty much find the answers and what the truth is and the things. The challenge is you, when government's done right here in Pensacola and you live here in Pensacola, it's easier for you to find out everything about it. As it goes further away, it's more of a challenge. As it goes to Tallahassee, it gets more difficult. And then it goes to Washington, and your ability to be there is less. Mm-hmm. And so it does create the way we can tell the story is these two different camps, and they tell the story. So how do you know what's true and what's not? And I think those are certainly challenges. But I think the way you do that is by being as informed as you can be. Mm-hmm. I believe every citizen has a responsibility to do that. And I think that is part of the issue is if it's probably dealing with something in Pensacola, you can get fairly educated on the issue. As it moves further away from here, it gets more difficult. I've enjoyed all of my political career has been in local politics, and I've enjoyed that. My father was in state politics, and he enjoyed that. It was just it's a different animal. And a little bit organized differently. I'm not saying any one's better than the other one. It's just where do you typically fall? And I think the more educated you can be, however it is, the better it is. This is why education, whether it's just your normal K-12 or certainly as you pursue degrees, bachelor's degree or even a graduate degree, obviously the more education it is, the more you avail yourself to the thoughts that are out there and understanding what's there. So I commend you in doing this and just wanting to learn more about it, and that's part of it. But it's really, that's why education is such a valuable part in this, and why it is so critical to our democracy is for us to have a strong functioning democracy. We've got to have an educated public that understands what's going on and won't be misled. Because if the idea is you're truly, the only thing you're going to do is go by what the story you're told, then that's where it becomes the ability to manipulate. And all the things that you mentioned that people have mistrust about the system, it sort of rises. It gives rise to exactly those things which you mentioned before. I think a large part of it, if we're going to have the democracy we want to have going forward, we're going to need educated people to participate in it, and that includes not just those who serve it, but those who vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, the education of voters is vastly important.
Right. So just some of the things you've done, some of the things you've accomplished as a mayor, what would you consider like some of your greatest achievements or, you know, something you really take pride in?
I've certainly had some here at mayor. I mean, I think most of mine at this point in 2 years of mayor haven't had as much chance to reflect as I did as a commissioner. Probably the biggest things I have pride in is what we were able to do at the commission, the things I was able to do around the oil spill and getting funding, the Restore Act done, getting money to come back from the Restore Act to here. There's going to be about $77 million that comes directly to Escambia County, directly to the city of Pensacola through coming this way. Obviously, there were other parts of it that are associated with NERDA that went to the state that we also participate in, or whether things like Triumph that we participate in. Those were all things that, you know, when I look back at, Florida did it much different than most other states, and that was intentional, and it really had a lot to do with a lot of the work I did and the fact that local government was able to really get a place at the table and do some things that I think will have long-lasting impact, both environmentally and economically in this community. So I'm very proud of those things, proud of things that we did even at the state level with some of the other funding that came out of Restore that went to things like the estuary plan that I think will be a huge benefit for Escambia and Santa Rosa County environmentally going forward in what we do with watershed, I think is going to be so important. So, I mean, these are some things that I really take pride in. I would say the biggest thing here at the city in 2 years that I've really been proud of is just reshaping the staff here, building a better relationship with council, doing all the things that we said we could do and work collaboratively to build a better city. And while sometimes it's hard to see it on the outside because of you don't control all the factors, clearly some of the challenges that we've run into in 2020 have made it harder for us to show that success. But I tell people all the time, if we hadn't have gone through the steps we did in 2019 to create a better city, to create a better working relationship with the council, and to create an overall better management system within city government and who we had in here working, I don't think we would have been as successful as dealing with the challenges of 2020. When I look at what we've done, we've had a number of challenges, but I do believe we've made a number of positive steps. We've kept Escambia County and the city of Pensacola relatively in a good economic position as compared to the rest of the nation and the world. Right. We have not suffered as much as other places have. We have had certainly lower business overall, but it's not to a point where, you know, there's some communities where it's absolutely been crippling. Right. I'm very grateful that some of the things we've been able to do in the city have continued to allow us to function and grow economically and do that in the right way, whereas a lot of places have actually shown contraction. And I think when you see what's happening, there's a lot of recognition and that Northwest Florida and the city of Pensacola is a good place to be. We've come out, we've been the best place to retire to. We've been the best place to start new businesses. We've been listed as a number of different best things to do. And I think it all comes down to the fact, you know, the one thing that's in common is we stayed focused on creating an environment that people want to live in, an environment that gives you the most amenities and really creates, you know, the best utilization of your public space. So I think those are the things we've tried to create, and that's going to translate into success no matter if you're in the middle of challenges or whether you're in the middle of economic boom. It's going to work for you.
Right. And so, you know, we just got almost through 2020, so you're kind of halfway through your term or a little bit more. What are some things you're currently working on and you're excited about? I mean, obviously you're dealing with COVID, and so that's probably at the forefront of your thought, but what are just some...
You know, I think we have some plans, and to see them actually come to fruition in creating better place making, making the community more walkable. We've certainly been focused on how we become more pedestrian friendly, walkable downtown. I think the hashtag project, I think the Bruce Beach project that we've got online, and unfortunately, you chose that seat. You should have come sat over here. I would have gladly looked so I get to look out the window. But you know, we've got a lot of things that are coming right out in front of us that I think are going to be very successful. I think these are going to be places that can propel us into the next decade, next 10, 20, 25 years, and then there'll be other successes. But if we can do the things that create that amenity that makes people want to be here, want to be a part of this community, make it a great place to live, we will capture that all over. And it's not just downtown. We're looking at other things across there, some of the things that we've done, the stuff we've done with economic development and really doing some changes out our airport to transform it into an economic engine with ST, that we're going to bring in probably about 2,000 jobs out there that are associated, well, about 1,500 jobs that are associated with aviation is going to be big. I think it just opens the door for more opportunities. We see it all the time. I'm seeing more people talk about aviation. The stuff that we have going on at the port with Blue Origin and where we go with space next. I mean, these things are there are a lot of different things that are coming to fruition, and people are recognizing that Pensacola is a place that you can make success happen. And you know, I think those are things we want to continue to see. We want successful people to think about coming to Pensacola because they bring that their success here. They make us all more successful. And it's sort of that success begets success, and it just keeps following it.
Right. So I know we're kind of running out of time here, but I have one last question for you. And so I can obviously tell, you know, you love, you know, Pensacola, you love your local area. But you talked about earlier about kind of like filling a need, and you saw that, and that's why you ran. Do you ever see yourself wanting to run for maybe state government or?
I've enjoyed the things I've been able to do. I feel like we've made a positive difference. I think I'm nearing the end of my stuff. I have a son that's about your age, and you know, if he wants to do something, if other people want to do it, you're always looking at the next generation. Yeah. I look at your generation and the opportunity they have, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy in any way. It'll be hard. It'll be challenges that will even be different. But I feel like the springboard that we've been able to do, you know, you'll have a much better place to spring from. But it's always going to be dependent upon good leadership. And so I think most important thing that's out there is that we have people thinking about who are going to be the next leaders, and that they're educated, and that they understand the importance of collaboration, working together, and how to bring success and betterment to the community. I think those are things that are going to be important, and whether it's locally or whether it's federally or on the state level, the same things are going to be important. And I think I'm very optimistic. I think if I was in your generation, I'd feel very optimistic about where we go in the future. I know the challenge is always you come out of school, you're in your 20s, and it's always tough to get things going. But I had a mentor who I worked with my first job out of college, who was he told me, he said, just keep doing things, learning, and keep doing stuff. He said, it's going to happen. He kind of told me, he said, if you keep doing the same things you're doing, learning, progressing, trying to get better, he said, it will happen for you. Usually it happens somewhere in that kind of late 20s to 30 range. And sure enough for me, it was like all of a sudden I turned 30, and all those things I'd really worked very hard at and to build at all of a sudden, came very open to me, and opportunities were out there. And I think the same thing exist, where the leaders of tomorrow are going to be are right now, people in your generation who are out there, and they just need to stay focused on what they're doing, learning more about their community they live in and how to serve it. And, you know, they go through those things, you get to an eventual point, you build that critical mass of relationship, working with people and be able to demonstrate what you can do, and just learning. Life is so much about learning experiences. I'm always learning. You learn from things you did yesterday. You learn what you did well. You learn what you did poorly. It's always a learning experience. And if you approach it every day like that, you're going to be successful, and they're going to be, we're going to be very dependent upon where we go with leaders in the future. So I feel like I've really kind of had my time, and I've been able to do some things. I'm very happy about things we've been able to make happen in this community and really move this community forward toward reaching its potential. But the good news is you don't ever get to everywhere you want to go. You always leave something undone. And that leaves the door open and the opportunity there for the next generation who will pick it up and take it forward. And I think I'm excited about the future holds. I think Pensacola has become, when I moved back here at 25, it was much more of a, it just, there weren't many people here at 25. There weren't many entry-level positions here. Now I look at what's happening in Pensacola, and there's so much more opportunity, even though I know sometimes you look at it, you go, God, compared to an Atlanta or some other places, maybe there's not, but there's vastly more opportunities here, and I think we're getting better at that. I think it's one of the things we need to keep working at in the city, but we're going to get there. And all of a sudden on cue, we've got the Blue Angels. So see, you did choose wrong. You should have chose this side, and you could see the Blue Angels.
Yeah, well, I'm really, really appreciative of you taking your time. I learned a lot, and I'm assuming my listeners did as well. And
well, I hope they do. Thank you so much for coming in today. We certainly enjoy the opportunity. Like I said before, Pensacola is a great community. I think it has great potential in front of it. I think we finally started to begin to capture some of that potential, but I'm not naive enough to think we'll capture all of the potential, which always is going to leave that future generation something else to do out there and be better and keep pushing it forward. And so I'm excited, certainly glad to see you're out there, many of your fellow students out there, really trying to position yourself for where we can take this community even further.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Passion Talks. To learn more about Mayor Robinson and the City of Pensacola, visit cityofpensacola.com and look for the Office of the Mayor page. To stay up to date with Passion Talks news and updates, make sure to follow at Passion Talks Podcast on Instagram. If you are interested in being a guest on the show, send a direct message to my account and I will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening.